In light of recent events, some people have questioned, why are we so stupid? Why are humans so gullible? Why do we believe in lies? Things that are obviously lies. And we go back in history and we see older humans behaving like that, following leaders that will promise things, following things that we know are not true. And we blamed it most of the time on lack of education. People didn't have access to information. They were brainwashed. They didn't have enough information to confront what they were being told. And so we justify that by saying those things. However, in the era of the internet, where you can find so many things in the internet, why still people go for the lie? Why do they go for the conspiracy theories? Why do they follow things that are not true? And now we understand. I saw the other day on Instagram a meme saying that, oh, remember when we thought the people were stupid because of lack of education? Yeah, it wasn't that. So we have come to the realization that there is something in us that not always makes us choose the truth. We exchange a lot of information, and most of that information is not true. Why? What is, let's say, wrong with us? At the same time, we are the only species in this planet that has accomplished this level of sophistication. We have created cultures, we have created empires, we have changed our surroundings to our needs. Nothing that any other animal have ever done. We have created civilizations, we have created tools so sophisticated, like the computers, internet, the atomic bomb. And so we cannot say that we are totally stupid. No. Apparently, whatever makes us so successful has something to do at the same time on why do we not always believe what is true. In this podcast, I will try to give my point of view, which is not totally mine. I have to say off the bat from the beginning that these ideas that I'm going to expose here, that I'm going to talk about are not totally mine, are not mine, actually. I learned them in books and I learned them from some authors that I'm going to quote. Mainly, let me say it right now, my ideas come from Noam Chomsky, Yuval Noah Harari, an Israeli author, mainly those two. And they try to explore the phenomenon of the human being, of sapiens, like Yuval Harari calls it, from history and from science. Now, before we go into what these authors say, let's explore some of the answers that have been given before. When you go to school, you're told that we're special because we have big brains. That's one of the things that I was told, like a couple of years ago when I went to primary school. They, at the time, science related success and thought and language and tool making with our big brains, because we had big brains and small stomachs. Energy could be used into our brains, into its connections. And because of the sheer brain size, we were special. But that's not totally true, because there are other species on the planet that have big brains compared to their body size. And there have been other human species before and along with us that had big brains too, and they didn't achieve this level of success. Actually, Neanderthals had bigger brains. So big brains have been around for like 3 million years. And there were creatures with big brains and small stomachs in the African savanna, and they were not successful. They were in the margins of all ecosystems. They were scavengers. They didn't have sophisticated tools. They had tools, but not sophisticated. They didn't hunt big prey. They were actually hunted by other predators like lions and you know, the big cats and whatnot. And they were not us. They were like us in brain size and even physiologically, but they didn't have the success. They were not us. Then another theory is that because we stand on 2 feet and we have free hands, we can make tools. And tool making is a sign of humanity. So again, tool making is not something that's exclusive of humankind. Other animals like chimpanzees and even otters use rocks to open, otters use rocks to open clams and seashells to get the meat inside. Chimpanzees use sticks to kill other chimpanzees, actually, and they use rocks to open nuts. They use tools. And there's other species that use tools in one or another way. So tool making and tool use is not something that's exclusive of us. So not big brains are not exclusive. Tool making is not exclusive. Then what is it? What is it that's exclusively ours and actually makes us who we are? What's that thing that differentiates us from the rest of animal kingdom? One other thing that many, many scientists say, and even philosophers, is language. So our language is so complex that our ability to communicate is so sophisticated that we can convey so much information different than other animals. Our language is something exclusive of humans, according to the scientists and philosophers, and that's what makes us who we are. Well, not entirely, I'm not saying no, but not entirely true, because there are other species that communicate. Communication is not exclusive from humans. We have very sophisticated ways of communication in the animal kingdom. Like we have dolphins with their and bats with the ultrasounds. We have the whales communicate in such a sophisticated way with they sing. They have a wide range of sounds to communicate things. And I think I've read somewhere that biologists have discovered that one whale can create one of those songs and then other whales picked it up and reproduce it. So communication per se on itself is not what makes us who we are. So none of those three things are the key. Not the big brain, not the tool making, not the communication. Although all those three things in us are very, very important and has a level of sophistication that doesn't have in other animals. So even though creatures like us with our cousins, like very, very like us, have been around for a long time, at certain point in history, around 70,000 to 30,000 years ago, a group of these creatures started to behave in a different way than other animals, than their cousins. At that period, we start seeing paintings in caves. We start seeing some forms of art for the first time, that didn't exist before. Before this group of animals, all tools had a purpose and they were just for hunting or doing something. They were utilitarian. This group of animals started to create pieces, started to create material things that didn't have a practical use, let's say. Practical in the way of hunting or carrying or cooking or any of that. These things pointed to something else. Something happened in this animal. Something happens in their brains. These big brains that have been around for a while started to behave in a different way. Well, according to Noam Chomsky and Yuval Noah Harari, what happened was a mutation. And this is not something that they want to say. It's something that science backs up. Like, there is a mutation in our brains that makes us behave in a certain way, but gives us the most important things is that it gives us language. Now, when you say language, you think about right away on communication, right? Language is something that you use to communicate. Well, the thing is, these authors say that language is not mainly or primarily for communication. Language is for thinking. Language is an ability that we have to imagine things. That's the primary use. That's the primary purpose. We can imagine realities that are not real. Let's say that sounds stupid, but what I'm trying to say is we imagine realities that are not part of this world. We imagine things that are new. For example, one of the remains found from these people, it's a man with a lion head. That's not real. That doesn't exist, right? They're trying to express something with it. So they're expressing what's in their heads, what they can imagine. So probably what happened was that figure was some kind of god, some kind of spirit, something that bound these people together. And this is where we're going with this. Why are we so successful? Because this mutation that makes us able to imagine things, this mutation makes us able to imagine things together with my words, which is something secondary to my thinking. I can express and I can communicate what I see that is not there, what I can imagine, what I can say. I can say, from now on, I could say the lion is our spirit guide. If we all believe in that, then we see ourselves like something special, like we have a bond. Animals in their element cannot cooperate in large scale. They actually, when you put a bunch of chimpanzees together, more than there's a threshold. If you put more than that threshold number of chimpanzees together, they will attack each other. So they cooperate in large numbers, but never the level of cooperation that we have achieved as humans. Like, think about when the Pope celebrates Mass in St. Peter's Square. How many people are there together? Now, think about a bunch of chimpanzees all together doing the same. No, that's unachievable. And why are those people there in St. Peter's Square listening to the Pope? Because they're all believing in the same thing. There is an imagined reality that binds them together. And that imagined reality, it's something that we can do because of this mutation that we have in our brain. And we can represent things that are not in the world. We can represent in paintings, and we can create with our words worlds that don't exist in reality. And that is what this mutation did to our brains. Language? Yes. Language is what makes us human. But language is not a tool for communication. That's ancillary. Like, that's what Chomsky calls it. It's secondary. The main purpose of language is thinking. If you want to know the specifics of this mutation in our brain, I would recommend the book Who We Are and How We Got Here, Ancient DNA and the New Science of a Human Past by David Rich. There he explains which genes changed their behavior. What happened is not that there was one mutation of one gene that caused this. It was one mutation that caused several genes to behave in a different way and create new pathways in our brain. So it was this big mass of brain that had been around for a while it rewired itself by this mutation. And then we started to see things differently, think differently, and communicate differently. That's what happened. Also, if you want to know more about human language and the beginnings, at least the beginnings of the language journey in humans, there is a book. There's actually a course of one of the great courses, The Story of Human Language by John McWhorter. It's on the great courses you can have in an Audible. So what are the implications of all this? Well, the most important one is what Yuval Noah Harari calls the end of biology and the beginning of history, which then he goes on to explain that means that we are not any more determined by our genes. We're not anymore, our behavior is not determined by our genes. Now, from that moment on, we became a very versatile species. We can adapt our behavior to our beliefs. So whatever we believed, that's how we behaved. And we adapted. The main thing about this, and this is something so important that I want you to understand, the most important thing about this is that when some belief didn't work anymore, we could change it. And we could adapt. While other animals can only do what their genes tells them, or their instinct based on their genetics tells them, we're not constrained by that. If something doesn't work, we change it. Lions only hunt in the savanna, and they hunt the prey that they're used to. And they have a social structure that doesn't change. Some lions cannot decide right away, okay, so now from now on, the males are going to hunt and the lion is just going to take care of the kids because that's how it works, or that's what we want. That's only fair. No, lions only behave in the way that they are determined. And because of that, they have such physical structures adapted to their way of life. So their behavior and their physiology are linked to their genes. So they cannot behave in any other way. And they cannot start eating, you know, a more vegetarian diet now because it's healthier. No, lions will only eat meat, and it will be the lioness who hunts, and the males are there only to make babies. That's how it works, and that's how it's going to be. And nobody can change it. Chimpanzees are only going to be led by an alpha male, and their social and family structure is going to be determined by their genes. If some male doesn't want to be obeying this alpha, he's going to go and fight him and take his place. But they're not going to make a council and decide that from now on we're going to be a democracy. Right? That doesn't work like that. They cannot change. They cannot go against their nature. They cannot go against their genes. But we change our behavior based on our beliefs, not on our genes. And that's how we went from being a marginal creature in the African savanna to dominate and be, we went right away from nothing, from being at the bottom of a food chain to being on the top. And that rapid ascent has some repercussions, and that we're going to talk about that later in other episodes. But the main repercussion is that now we spread all over, and we not just adapted, like we didn't evolve to the conditions that we found. We made the conditions changed to our needs. We, even before agriculture, we changed our environment to our needs. There's records showing that whatever humans showed up in that spread all over the globe, the big mammals disappeared because we hunted them to death. And not just big mammals, other human species disappeared too. Because while they were determined, they were constrained. Their behavior was constrained by their genetics. Our behavior could adapt. So the story that we make in our big brains and that we can make other people see, these stories create cooperation and they give structure and order to human societies, small clans, small tribes at the beginning, and then, you know, huge empires. These stories that we can imagine and make other people imagine with us, Harari calls them shared imagined realities. Shared imagined realities. These stories, when they don't work anymore, they can be changed. And when something changes in the conditions, when something changes in our environment, when something doesn't work, we change the story and we keep going. Just think about what happened in France in the 18th century. The French people went from believing in the power of a king that was anointed by God to the power of a people. Overnight, without changing their genes, they went from believing in one political structure, one imagined reality, into another imagined reality. They changed the story, and then they changed their behavior based on the new story. So, to sum it up, what makes us humans is language. That language capability appeared 70,000 to 30,000 years ago when humans had a mutation in their brains that made them able to imagine things that were not real and make up stories that made them cooperate better than other species and also adapt better to change the circumstances. When the story doesn't work, we change it. When the story doesn't represent what the group needs, when the conditions and the environment change, we change the story and we keep our cooperation and our order. This also helps explain what the initial question was, why do we believe lies? Why do we believe things that are not true? Because our brain is not evolved. This mutation that we have that makes us so successful is not there to seek the truth per se. It's there to create imagined realities that make us cooperate. That's the main purpose of this mutation. That's the main purpose of our brain, actually. So even though we liberalize all knowledge in the world, people are going to go and pick what they want to believe and create communities around those things. Just think about all the anti-vaxxer communities, people who believe that Earth is flat. There are communities of people who gather around that notion, around that lie. And it's not important that what they believe is a lie. It creates community. It creates cooperation between the members. And that's a trick. That's something that we have to be aware of because sometimes it might work against us. In the next episodes, we're going to keep exploring about this matters, about our brain, how it behaves, some characteristics of our way of thinking and what this mutation did to us. It just didn't make us successful. There are some side effects, and we're going to talk about that. We're going to explore all these things. Let me know what would you like to discuss, maybe, and see you next time.